what are you doing?
Frying bacon and heating coffee. You hungry?
Always, but are you sure that's allowed?
What do you mean? Making breakfast?
Oh, making fire in a forest.
Oh, I don't know. It's too late now anyway. Hey, look, we're in Holland. The Dutch are more relaxed about
this. But we're not in Holland. We're not even in the Netherlands.
Oh, well, okay, technically Belgium, but look, I mean, the border is literally just over there.
Oh, yeah, and are the Belgian authorities just as relaxed?
Look, if we eat quickly, we don't have to find out. Yeah, get that down here.
Okay. I mean, if you told me that we'd be camping, I might have reconsidered this tour of German borders idea.
Yeah, but this is the best way to do it. No, see the real landscape. Meet real people.
Yeah, the Belgian police, for example.
Oh, come on. That's the beauty of the border triangle. We just hop into Holland and they have got absolutely no jurisdiction.
Have you ever heard of Interpol?
Oh, come on, for goodness sake, Izzy, you're getting paranoid. Anyway, that's just for terrorists, not for poetry lovers.
Let's just get started with the episode, shall we? Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pod.
My name's Orlando.
And I'm Izzy.
And we are two people who like poetry.
Love poetry.
Love poetry. And we want to share that love
with you.
In our second season, we'll be travelling along the German border to meet our neighbours.
And their poetry. And we'll try and understand what borders mean in our day and age.
Welcome to the Poetry Pod Season 2, Poetry on the Edge.
Ah, coffee is good.
Why did you stay up that late anyway?
I was reading this book of Luxembourgish poems and riddles that Mark gave me.
You're very happy that you happen to have a brother-in-law from Luxembourg, by the way. It was really nice to meet him.
Yeah, it was, right. You know, we could have stayed there overnight rather than camping out here in the forest and making illegal fires.
Just let it go, Izzy. Let it go. Tell me about the book.
Right, so it's a collection of poems and riddles and jokes called the Luxemburger Kinderreime. So it's written for kids. And they were all collected by Luxembourg's national poet, Dix.
They have a national poet?
Yeah.
Like the sort of poet laureate?
No, well, it's more like the Goethe of Luxembourg.
The Goethe? So is he still alive?
No, he was alive in the 19th century. He died in 1891.
So he's very dead.
He's very dead.
Very dead.
He's been dead for a long time.
Right,
But he was quite the European, actually.
Oh,
so
really?
His name was Edmond de La Fontaine.
Okay.
And actually his dad went on to become the first prime minister of Luxembourg.
Really?
Which is very interesting. Superb. And so Dix, which was his pen name...
Yeah, it's an interesting name, isn't it?
It is a very interesting name. I'm pretty sure he didn't speak English.
That's just as well, I think.
Yeah.
Hopefully his listeners didn't either.
Yeah. So he grew up in Luxembourg. He studied at Liège. Then he spent another year studying in Heidelberg to perfect his German. And he worked as a lawyer, but then also he wrote all these poems in the Luxembourg dialect.
Okay. Are you gonna give me an example of this dialect?
Here is a riddle for you.
Okay.
Für wat leeft ein Hus über dem Berg?
Hus. Sounds like house. Can it be house?
It's very close. It's Haas.
Oh, you mean as in rabbit?
Rabbit.
Close to a house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. But why did the rabbit jump over the mountain?
Mm-hmm. Run over the mountain.
Yeah, And
the answer is, weil nicht drin durchlaufen kann.
Because he can't go through it.
Yes.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Hey.
That is exactly
right. It's funny because it actually sounds a lot like the Alsatian dialect, which we just heard.
Absolutely. And they're pretty closely related.
Like are they?
Luxembourgish is part of the Moselle-Franconian language group, which is part of the Central West Germanic languages.
Dr. Schmier.
Dr. Schmier.
Yeah.
They're very closely linked, and in all these border regions here along the Rhine, it's a mix of German and French, and then a couple of local dialect words as well.
Yeah, sounds a lot like Peltish, you know, where I come from.
Yeah, and it's also historically I think very similar to Alsatian in that it was never really accepted as a proper language of its own.
Right,
it was always the dialect, the language of the people.
Yeah.
but it wasn't considered the, you know, the high language, the proper language.
No, no.
And Mark, for example, he told me he grew up speaking Luxembourgish.
Really?
But then in school, you know, they had classes in Luxembourgish occasionally.
It's a bit like Welsh.
But, you know? Yeah, it's a bit like Welsh. Yeah. Or like, I guess, Irish Gaelic as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, it's sort of...
So did they have it beaten out of them then in subsequent years?
Not that much, but it was sort of, it wasn't the proper way to speak in a way, I guess. But it's now they're raising more awareness for the language and, you know, the role it plays in identity and
so
stuff.
So it's going through a resurgence.
Yeah.
Like Alsatian.
And they're actually, they're programming a spell checker for your phone so you can type in Luxembourgish.
In Luxembourgish.
Yeah.
Cool.
And you can study Luxembourgish as a foreign language.
So if you want to talk about rabbits going through hills.
Exactly.
You just,
you'll have
rabbit and hill in, and that will come up in your...
Yeah, you'll have the perfect... orthography.
Very good.
And, fun fact, you can study Luxembourgish at the University of Sheffield.
Oh, well, of course.
Of course.
I mean, naturally,
why wouldn't you?
Where else?
It's, yeah.
In the Peak District.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They've got a Centre for Luxembourg Studies. But then, obviously, that's very much about, you know, minority languages and identity and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, but,
okay.
I mean, essentially, it just sounds like German after a couple of glasses of good Moselle wine.
So, have you got any other sort of fun things from this book of yours?
Yeah, yeah. Here, this tongue twister that I found.
Yeah, tongue twister.
Yeah,
very good.
Goes like this: Va munjere wes, va munjere wer, mes munjema munjere munjere mer er. Da munjere net wes mer munjere as, ge munjema munjere munjere sver was.
Can I now take the piss out of you like you took the piss out of me when I did my early German accent from the Minnesänger?
Yeah, that's fair enough, I guess. It's basically a play on words with sometimes, someone, somehow. That sort
As
of
in
thing.
Manchmal.
Manchmal.
Manchmal. Manchmal.
Manchmal.
Manchmal. Manchmal. So it's kind of manchmal, but in French.
Yeah.
It's
manchmal if you have food in your mouth.
We're going back to your old theory of having food.
Yeah,
speaking,
I think probably
speaking,
works for Luxembourgish as
speaking,
well.
Okay, yeah, very good.
And Mark also taught me some really cool expressions
in
Luxembourgish.
So I'm all ears.
You know how in English you've got nerves of steel?
Yes.
Right, so in German you've got nerves of wire rope.
Bit of a mouthful. Drahtseile.
Yeah, so that's very stronger.
Even
stronger.
German, yeah.
In Luxembourg, they've got the strongest nerves of all in Europe because they've got Nerven wie getretzt Tramschiene.
Which means?
Nerves of braided railway tracks.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they've had a trip to the orthodontist.
True.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. And final expression that I really like, and I'll start using that in English and German as well.
Yeah.
It's Hudlerfatz.
Hudlerfatz. No swearing, please.
True, yeah. It's a bit sweary.
So what does it mean? Come on.
So it translates to tatters and rags. What do you think that could mean? What context could you use that?
Tatters and rags. Well, if you're a vagabond, perhaps, you're just wearing tatters and rags. These clothes are Hudlerfatz.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Precisely.
My clothes are Hudlerfatz.
Yeah, but you could also say that when they're not good quality, you know.
Ah,
if you buy a really cheap T-shirt, you
so
could
it's a kind
oh,
of a it's a kind of a negative
Your
expression.
Phone could be, for example, my old phone was really Hudlerfatz.
If I look at my...
Your phone
my
is
phone
pretty
is,
Hudlerfatz.
Yeah, it's got a broken screen, right? Yeah. Hudlerfatz, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And Hudlerfatz. Then also, yeah. After a night of heavy drinking,
it's got nothing
example,
to do with being in close proximity to someone and breaking wind.
No, it's
no?
not got anything to do with breaking wind. But then also, you know, when you've had a long night of drinking, you're also...
You're Hudlerfatz.
Hudlerfatz.
So you're kind of broken down and rags and bones.
Rags and tatters.
Rags and
Hudlerfatz.
Tatters.
I think
Very
it's
nice.
A great expression.
You've done a lot of research.
Yeah.
It's not bad considering you've just woken up.
Linguistics is fun.
Well, I was reading some Belgian poetry and I came across a poem. It reminded me a bit of your brother-in-law because, and check this out, it's called Mark Greets Things in the Morning.
Oh.
Mark Greets Things in the Morning. And it's by a guy called, a Belgian poet called Paul van Ostijen. And he had a Dutch dad and a Flemish mum. And he was known as Mister, as in Mister, because he was a bit of a dandy. And he was also a real pro-Flemish independence kämpfer. Yeah, he fought for Flemish independence. He was called a Flamignon, a Flamignon.
A flaming Flamignon.
Yeah, someone who was for Flemish independence and Flemish activism. Yeah, and after the First World War, he went to Berlin And his kind of poetry, yeah, it's a kind of mix of Dadaism and Expressionism. Dadaism, we know what Dadaism is, don't we? But the sort of, yeah, how would you define Dadaism?
Ooh, how would I define Dada?
Quickly.
Two-minute explanation of
Dada. Do it in a sound. Hudlafats.
Hudlafats.
Is that Dadaistic?
You could probably write a very good Dadaist poem out of Hudlafats.
You'd have to split it into syllables, wouldn't you? Sort of, Hudlafats, or something like that. You know, just sort of funny noises and stuff like that. Mm. Yeah, and he wrote these kind of very interesting things. He didn't live very long, old Van Ostijen. I just was thinking of your brother-in-law, and I just thought this was a cool poem. So here we go. Paul von Ostijen, Mark greets things in the morning. Hi, boy with the bike on the vase on the bloom, plume, plume. Hi, chair by the table. Hi, bread on the table. Hi, fisher of fish with the pipe. And hi, fisher of fish with cap. Cap and pipe of the fisher of fish. Hi, fish. Hi, little fish. Hi, tiny fishy fine of mine. Did you like that?
Yeah, and it sounds a bit like Mark, actually. I could imagine Mark actually greeting things in the morning like that.
Yeah. Has he got a screw loose up top?
Sometimes.
Oh, he's from Luxembourg,
Mongemort.
Isn't he?
Mongemort
is a Hudlafats.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hello? Uh-oh, that's the border police.
Don't be ridiculous, Izzy. She is definitely not the border police.
Hi, good morning. I don't think you're allowed to have fire here.
See, I told you.
Oh, I'm really sorry. I had no idea. But, I mean, look, we've just finished our breakfast anyway, haven't we?
What are you doing out here in the forest?
Oh, you know, we're just traveling the world and talk about poetry.
As one does.
Okay, that's funny. I run a poetry night.
What, so you're not a policeman?
No, I'm not. I'm just a poetry slammer.
You're not a... You're just a poetry slammer. Oh, my God, that's actually quite a... That's a real coincidence. Because we are basically two poetry fanatics on tour going across the German border. We've gone a little bit too far over the German border, as it turns out. So you're a poetry slammer. Oh, my God. Can you just say, where are we? Because I thought we were in Belgium.
Yeah, we are in Belgium, but we are in East Belgium. That's a German-speaking part of Belgium. Really small part, but yeah.
So what is there a dialect where you live?
Yeah, we're speaking German, but with an accent. And I think that we can tell in our saying that we are close to the French speaking part, because we often say French words in completely German sense. That's a little bit funny, and especially with older generations, you can hear the accent really strongly, I think. And with the young people, you can hear it as well, but because we are using the vocabulary as well. That's really funny.
that's funny, because we've just come from Alsace, and in Alsace they do exactly the same thing. So you've got a sentence where you hear mostly French, and then suddenly a bit of German comes in with a funny accent. What have you got, like an example? Because I mean, there are words like parapluie and trottoir, which the Elsasser use in the middle of their sentences, and the Germans use in their sentences. So what kind of stuff do you say then with this dialect?
Maybe the typical Belgian sentences would be ich sing über dem Trottoir, da kam der Kamion an mir raus, auf der Schreck habe ich mich im Pistolet gegessen. That would be really typical East Belgium and of the area of Newfin, And I'm coming from Newfin, so that's
this.
And in Hi, German, you would say this sentence, ich ging über den Bürgersteig, als ein Lieferwagen angerast kam, vor lauter Schreck habe ich dann ein Milchbrötchen gegessen. I know the sentence not really makes sense, but I think it's a good example.
So is that what happens when you get scared? You eat bread rolls?
Yeah.
I can definitely agree with that. I think that's an excellent plan.
I think Izzy would like that very much.
Absolutely. I think I need a Milchbrötchen now, you know, that I mistook you for the border police.
A milk roll. I don't think you can translate Milchbrötchen, can you? Milk roll. Sounds
always
nice, though, doesn't
it? Always a good idea.
Absolutely. So, okay, so you run a kind of poetry slam, and you come from Eupen, is it? Eupen?
Eupen.
Which is kind of close to the, we're not far from it here, are we? We're close to the German border.
Yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about your poetry slam. And
Just I'm doing poetry slam and spoken word. I'm into this scene for 2 years now. And since then, I stand on stages really often and write texts, often really emotional and political. And in my texts, I often dealt with racism and feminism. And that's why I'm a convinced feminist. And I want to reflect these themes in my texts as well. So it's really important for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I feel especially rural areas, like, you know, in the countryside, often have a reputation of being sort of conservative, and, you know, themes like feminism perhaps don't come up quite as much. So I think it's great that if you say, well, this is something important to me, I'll carry it to my hometown, and I'll start a conversation.
So how much contact do you actually have with, because you mentioned you're German speaking, we're not far from Aachen, for example. How much contact do you have with Aachen? Do you have contact with any other people who do poetry there?
Yeah, as well. Aachen is really important for people in the area of Eupen, because here is not really much to do. So if you want to see something special, you go to Aachen or Liège. But this is in Belgium, but we often go to Aachen. Me, for example, I work in Aachen as well. I make my design apprenticeship here. So I'm in Aachen every day.
So I guess you feel more at home in Aachen than in Liège. Is that right?
That's it. That's right.
Okay. Because I guess historically then East Belgium, I mean, I don't know, but has it... is it sort of gone backwards and forwards? Has it been part of Germany and then it's been part of Belgium? And but people in East Belgium, they feel probably more German then, do they?
Yeah, that's true. That's because of the language, I think, because I don't really speak French. So when I go, I'm riding with my car 10 minutes and I don't understand the other people from Belgium. So I go to Germany and all is good. So, and it's more easy.
But do you call yourself a Belgian?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Okay, okay. So you, so when Belgium play football or take part in athletics, you're cheering for them, yeah?
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And I mean, what kind of, so in terms of poetry, what kind of cross-border things do you do? Do you have links with Holland, for example? Do you know anybody who comes from Holland? Because we're very close to the Dutch border as well, aren't we?
Yeah, that's true. We not really have much contact with Holland, I think. It's more really like German, also with the poetry scene. I really have many, many Auftritte.
Performances, events.
Yes, many performances in Germany, in Aachen, at Satz nach Form. And they make really cool poetry slams. I just can speak it for you.
Now, I know this is a really random thing to ask in the middle of a forest, but could we perhaps hear one of your poems?
Yeah, sure.
Camille Godessart, Nicht genug.
Nicht genug. Zwei Worte, die so einige Menschen in diesem Raum schon oft hören mussten. Zwei Worte, die sich wie ein stumpfes Messer anfühlen, das einem ohne Vorwarnung in den Rücken gerammt wird. Zwei Worte, die einfach nur verdammt wehtun. Du bist noch nicht reif genug, um ernst genommen zu werden. Du hast nicht genug Mumm, um diesen Job zu machen. Du arbeitest zu viel, du arbeitest zu wenig. Du bist zu dünn, du solltest mal abnehmen. Du stellst dich dumm an, du stellst einfach niemanden zufrieden. Wir finden einfach kein Mittelmaß mehr. Zwischen zu viel und zu wenig, zu gut oder zu schlecht, in diesem Strom der Zeit, der mich wie einen dünnen Faden zerreißt, weil man einfach nicht mehr mithalten kann. Aber wie soll man denn auch in einer Gesellschaft, die keine Einzigartigkeit akzeptiert, sondern die Menschen dazu motiviert, wie ein Fisch mit dem Strom zu schwimmen und immer nickend zuzustimmen, und wenn man das nicht tut? Tja, dann ist das wohl dein Problem. Denn Einzigartigkeit wird lieber verspottet, anstatt akzeptiert zu werden. Man sollte ja schon dem Idealbild entsprechen, da man schon fast Angst haben muss, seine Besonderheit auszuleben. Aber die Gesellschaft ist leider kein Geben und Nehmen, sondern ein einseitiger Kreislauf, in dem man es keinem so richtig recht machen kann. Und es ist schwer, in einer Welt zu leben, in der die Schnelllebigkeit die Selbstzweifel nicht gerade vom Meeresgrund verschwinden lässt. Denn dieses beunruhigende Gefühl, was sich in meinem Magenbereich aufstockt, macht mir nicht nur Angst, denn es verletzt. Und auf sein Herz hört man ja ganz bestimmt nicht. Aber was ist denn dann, wenn unsere Seele irgendwann keine Energie mehr hat für diese Last, der wir viel zu oft ausgesetzt sind? Und trotzdem machen alle, was die großen Fische sagen, also schwimmen alle munter weiter. Und das einfach nur, weil sie Angst vor ihnen haben, aber alles, was wir tun, ist es, uns zu fragen, wer oder was. Denn schlussendlich das Problem ist inmitten der ganzen Menschen, die eigentlich alle nur noch um ihr Dasein kämpfen. Es ist schwer. Aber wir müssen akzeptieren, dass das Einzige, was wirklich nicht genug ist, genau das ist, was uns vorgepredigt wird. Denn es ist nur nicht genug, dass wir immer wie ein kleiner Fisch mit dem Strom schwimmen. Es ist nicht genug, uns immer anzupassen und mit den ganzen Lasten allein zu verweilen. Es ist nicht genug, sich dazu zu zwingen, seine Zeit nur damit zu verbringen, die anderen zufrieden zu stellen. Es ist nicht genug. Ich bin orientierungslos. Aber nicht ohne Hoffnung. Ich bin auch nicht immer glücklich, aber auf der Suche nach dem Gut genug sein, und es ist verdammt schwer, gegen diese laufenden Gewässer zu schwimmen, die mich erklimmen, als wäre ich nur ein ganz kleiner Felsen im offenen Meer. Ich versuche zu verschwinden, diesem ganzen Wahnsinn hier zu entrinnen, doch es hört nicht auf, dieses Gefühl in meinem Bauch, dieser Schmerz, diese Frust, diese Angst. Genau, die Angst, nicht genug zu sein. Ich meine, was soll man dann auch über sich denken, wenn alle Menschen dich für deine Fehler verurteilen, aber dann Sachen gesagt werden wie: aus Fehlern wird man klug. Aber das ist mir nicht genug, weil nie vermittelt wird, dass man gut so ist, wie man halt ist, aber das ist man ja auch nicht. Eins steht jedenfalls fest: mit dem Strom schwimmen werde ich ganz sicherlich nicht, auch wenn mir das noch so einige Steine in den Weg legen wird. Aber ich habe einfach keine Lust mehr, mir sagen zu lassen, inwiefern ich zu der Gesellschaft passe oder auch nicht. Ich habe keine Lust mehr, die Tage zu zählen und auf den Moment zu warten, an dem die Karten endlich mal offen auf den Tisch gelegt werden. Ich habe keine Lust mehr, immer anhören zu müssen, dass ich nicht genug sei, obwohl ich stets mein Bestes gebe. Zu schwach bin, weil ich eigentlich nur für meine Meinung gerade stehe. Naja. Wenn ich mal darüber nachdenke, bin ich eigentlich nur nicht genug für die anderen. Und trotzdem versucht man noch, den hohen Ansprüchen gerecht zu werden, aber wieso? Man wird doch nie alle zufriedenstellen. Und deswegen sollte uns das egal sein, denn die einzige Person, für die du genug sein solltest, bist du selbst. Du bist für dich verantwortlich. Du bist verantwortlich für dein Glück, deine Liebe. Ich weiß, es klingt verrückt und es ist nicht leicht, aber genau das ist der Schlüssel zu deiner Zufriedenheit. Und glaube mir, egal wie schwer es gerade für dich ist, ich glaube fest an dich.
Wow, that was really interesting. So I guess it's kind of self-explanatory, not enough. But I mean, is that something you feel? I mean, do you really feel that? Can I ask you a personal question?
Yeah, sure.
How old are you?
I'm 19 years old.
You're 19. So I mean, and you, do you have that feeling of not being enough? Because I mean, that's sad.
Yeah, sure. I think young people often have the feeling not being enough, not really feeling comfortable in this community. And I think it's a big problem. But I think it's also important that we know that it's a problem we make ourselves in our heads. But I think it has not to be a problem, but we make it worse. Like,
do you feel that's something also peculiar to where you come from? Are there a lot of young people, for example, in Eupen, your friends and, you know, all of your acquaintances who feel like that as well? Do they share the same sort of feeling?
Yeah.
I think it's probably also an international phenomenon, mm-hmm. isn't it? I think with, I mean, the obvious thing is social media. You always see everyone's holiday photos and their job promotions and their great parties and everything. You never see the sort of dark side to people's lives.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think as well is a big problem, the internet, social media, all this stuff.
So you said you write about feminism, you're also this kind of thing of, you know, feelings of not being adequate in your society. Yeah. And when you do events in Eupen, how many people come along to see it? Because Eupen is not a very big place, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think in Stade we not really have many culture projects, many events. So if there is something, all people go for it. So because here's really not much. And so I think people are really happy here if they have offers and events here.
So what are your projects at the moment? So you run your poetry night. Do you also have books coming out or other major projects that are happening at the moment?
Yeah, I have a big project for now because I'm organizing a reading stage in Lupin. So a Lesebühne in German. It's a literary event in which poets perform self-written texts in front of an audience. It's kind of a poetry slam, but not really because there's not a Wettbewerb.
Mm-hmm. It's not a competition.
Yeah, it's not a competition. So it's just about the poets, about the poems, the all the stuff they make, the self-written texts. And I'm the founder of this reading stage with the name Stimmcode. And yeah, that's it. I think you should
pick up. Is that? Are they the real police?
Well, they certainly don't look like they run a poetry night.
Oh God, Izzy, grab the kettle and run! Oh, God, why do we always get into trouble with the law?
No. Oh, look, there's a maze. They'll never find us in there.
God, let's get in there, quick! Oh God, that was close. Where are we anyway?
Welcome to the labyrinth. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
Oh, sounds a little bit macabre. I'm beginning to abandon all hope. Oh my God, look, they've followed us in here.
Oh,
quick,
no.
Round the corner. Okay, behind this bush.
Yeah, all right, let's
down.
Let's head on
down.
Let's squeeze through there. Okay. I think we're safe now.
Can you hear anything? Can you smell pork?
Pork.
Police. Pigs. Pork.
I thought you were talking about sausages.
Yeah. Boring.
Shall we have a tea break now?
It'll have to be a very secret tea break.
All right.
Yeah. Mind you, all this place actually reminds me, being in Belgium, of a poem.
Ooh, remarkable. Do I have to listen?
You have got no choice at all. It's either this or the Belgian police.
I mean, that's a close call, but go on then.
Very kind of you. Edith Wharton, La Belgique. Ne regrette rien. Not with her ruined silver spires, not with her cities shamed and rent, perish the imperishable fires that shape the homestead from the tent. Wherever men are staunch and free, there shall she keep her fearless state, and homeless to great nations be the home of all that make them great.
Keep quiet, otherwise the Belgian police will make the Belgian prison our home.
Don't tell me to be quiet and then get louder while you're doing it.
Sorry. I mean, kind of, you know, if you think about it, we're sort of in the heartland of Europe right now, right? Because this is sort of where it all started with, you know, Belgium, Luxembourg, Holland, Germany.
Yeah.
Right.
Edith Wharton thought so, actually. Edith Wharton. Who ended up living in Europe because she loved it so much, but she was American.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Just following in your footsteps, always finding female American poets.
Excellent.
She was a New York City aristocrat.
Oh, right.
And, born Edith Newbold Jones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she moved over to, in 1907, to France.
Right.
So yeah, she was a great fan of Europe, mm-hmm. and very, very European. So you're right. We are sort of in the very, very centre of Europe, aren't we?
Yeah, it feels like it.
Epicentre, if you like.
Centre of Europe.
Yeah.
Speaking of, shall we do a little quiz about Europe?
We could do a sort of an informal quiz,
informal
I suppose.
Quiz, yeah. While we wait for the police to leave.
In which case, I will start the ball rolling. I have a question for you. Which city are we near in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. which was the place where the euro was born?
Ooh. Would that be Maastricht?
Once again, your general knowledge is quite incredible. Yes, it is Maastricht. I'm not going to try and pronounce it in the Holland ways. Mm-hmm. I'd probably spit all over you. Mm-hmm. And second question, what were the criteria for the euro that were decided on at Maastricht? This is a harder question.
That is a very difficult
question. And you cannot possibly know the answer.
I cannot possibly know the answer. And so they decided on different criteria that the euro would have to meet.
Yeah, in all of the different countries that would be adopting the euro, which back then I think was about 10.
Right. So are these the criteria for the countries to
sort of central criteria that the treaty would govern. Yeah.
Right. So I imagine it's probably something like they weren't allowed to have too much debt.
Yes, that I think was part of it. Deficits, yes, was mm-hmm. one thing. This is fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like listening to the Today program on Radio 4. Carry on anyway. Yeah, so debts, deficits, I'll take that for half a point, yes. What else?
Stable economy?
Now we're sort of getting a little more vague. It's a bit hudlafats, I would say. Inflation, so setting an inflation rate that mm-hmm. of no more than 1.5 right. percentage points. I don't know how I know that. I'm just knowledgeable like that.
I guess.
Government deficits is something you mentioned. Exchange rates, yeah. And, interest rates that are no more than 2 percentage points higher than the 3 member states with the lowest inflation. Fascinating.
Yeah.
The sort of thing you expect to hear on a poetry podcast,
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
I think I might just get myself arrested by the British police now.
So there you go. There you
right.
go. Yeah. Do you know anything about Maastricht?
I do not know anything about Maastricht, but let's get on with the quiz. So that obviously I got one point for Maastricht. I did not get a point for
you got one
Economy 101.
Yeah, no, you didn't. You're not much of an economist.
I'm not going to claim any points for that. No.
So come on then, let's hear your questions.
Right, I've got a couple of more literary questions.
Okay.
Ish. Yeah. So, first question, I'll be very disappointed if you don't know that one. So, you know the amazing anthem that is also the new intro to the Poetry Pod?
Oh, you mean that?
The Ode to Joy.
The Ode to Despair.
So that you wrote the lyrics for that?
I think... It was Schiller.
Are you sure? Could it be Goethe?
I don't know if this is a tactic of yours. The Ode to Joy. You're probably being nice. I'm going to say Schiller, nonetheless.
Yes, that is correct.
You weren't being nice at all.
I was being mean.
You were being very mean. Yeah.
I was being very mean. Yeah. Good, but that's a point for you.
The moral of the story is don't listen to Izzy in any situation. Yeah,
right, second question.
Okay,
mythology.
Okay.
So Europe was obviously a figure in Greek mythology.
Right.
Under which guise did Zeus try and get to know her?
What do you mean?
So Europe, or Europa, was a woman.
Was a woman, yeah.
And obviously, because she was a woman, obviously Zeus was madly in love with her.
A woman with 10 centrally controlled breasts, or I don't know.
No, she was a woman, and Zeus assumed another form.
Okay, I see. So he, I see. Which form did he assume?
Form did he assume?
Did he turn into an animal of any kind?
Mm-hmm.
Let me think. If I think of Britain, Albion, maybe some form of tiger or cat of some description?
No. Very far. He turned into a bull.
A Stier.
And that's why we've got Europa und der Stier.
Yeah, okay.
If you look
okay.
up Europa, you'll very often see her with...
Really? With a bull?
With a bull.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You didn't butt Europa to death.
So, you've got 1 point, I've got 1 point.
Okay.
Final question.
Go on. This is the decider.
Okay,
go on.
There is a planet in our solar system which has a moon called Europa.
I know this. This is Jupiter.
It is. Well done.
These sorts of questions I'm good at.
Good.
Very good. Oh, look. Look.
Oh.
There's a sign to the loos. So, do you need to pee?
I don't, but I think
I mean, you will soon. You always
good
do. I mean, it'd be perfect
for you.
Find
the way out of the maze, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's pretty impressive if you think about it. You know, like 80 years ago, this place was ravaged by the war.
Yeah, yeah, true. It's probably ravaged by a lot of wars. I mean, we're in this sort of strange Bermuda Triangle, which used to be called the Duchy of Limburg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Duchy of Limburg, which... It sort of goes back to Roman times, and yeah, it goes all the way down to, I mean, it's sort of right at the bottom of Belgium, so more or less where we are. And but it goes all the way up, also sort of near Düsseldorf and that sort of area. It's quite a sort of long, thin area, and they speak their own dialect, or at least they used to.
Yeah,
I don't know if they still do.
I mean, it's probably been. Again, like the Elsass region, moved back and forth between the powers. Right?
Totally, kind of been totally. Like, well, yeah, like Camille was telling us, right?
Yeah,
I mean, exactly.
Absolutely.
With East Belgium, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But they are still, like speaking of the East Belgians, they're very, very passionate lot, still very passionate about their heritage.
Yeah, and actually Thomas Hardy wrote a poem.
Did he now?
About Belgium in the First World War, because they were attacked in 1914 by Germany in an attempt to get to France, and they just destroyed everything that they found along the way.
Right, yeah.
And so a lot of Belgian people then fled the country. And Thomas Hardy wrote a poem about that.
Okay.
To hear it.
I don't have much choice, rather
you
like
don't.
You didn't five yeah. minutes ago. Exactly. Go on, let's hear it.
Thomas Hardy, On the Belgian Expatriation, October 18th, 1914. I dreamt that people from the land of chimes arrived one autumn morning with their bells to hoist them on the towers and citadels of my own country, that the musical rhymes rung by them into space at meted times amid the market's daily stir and stress and the night's empty starlit silentness might solace souls of this and kindred climes. Then I awoke, and lo, before me stood the visioned ones, but pale and full of fear. From Bruges they came, and Antwerp and Ostend. No carillons in their train. Foes of mad mood had shattered these to shards amid the gear of ravaged roof and smouldering gable end.
Very evocative poem, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's sort of comparing a dream where he imagines this sort of these beautiful sounds coming over from Belgium or being brought over, but the reality is
pretty grim.
Pretty grim, kind of
imagining these strong and cheerful people, kind of despite everything, still have their strength and their music.
Yeah.
But then what he found were people who'd been ravaged by the war, their lives destroyed, basically.
Belgium, I mean, as you think about the sort of geopolitical position, it's in a pretty bad place. I mean, certainly in the 20th century. I mean, for the Second World War, it was awful as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they got just ravaged a second time, didn't they? And there was a guy, I mean, okay, we're talking about Belgium, but I mean, it was the same for Holland. And there's actually a poet I discovered called Jacob Higentlich. And Higentlich came from Roermond, which is in the Netherlands, but it's literally, I don't know, what, 20 kilometers away from where we are here, north. And he was Jewish and he was gay. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, in terms of the Nazis, this guy was right, he would have been on the hit list.
Yeah.
And in Limburg, you know, if you were a Jew, you were not as persecuted as you were in other parts of Europe at that time. But, you know, he was a real Zionist, this guy, Higentlich. And he wrote a lot of pro-Zionist stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, he also started life, you know, his started life as a teacher, and his dad wanted him to do something else. But in the end, he became a fully fledged poet. Mm-hmm. But in the end, yeah, it's very tragic because at the age of 33, 1940, yeah, it was just all too much for him. And he took poison and committed suicide. Yeah, because of the whole, obviously, you know, Germany came through and the situation was just...
Totally hopeless.
And yeah, I've got, I mean, there's one poem from a selection of poems that he wrote. And I mean, I guess it sort of symbolizes the terrible situation he must have been. It's quite expressionistic. Mm-hmm. I've translated it. It's called, I mean, originally Haben die Sieben, and in English translation, the Seven at Midnight, Jakob Higentlich. The Seven at Midnight, having brought my soul to rest, left. How slowly they walked, my soul in the middle. They carried candles in their hands, the light yellowing the black land. I gave the devil my soul, went soullessly through life. The bells ring and death is dancing. Sweetheart sings the blood-red songs. Now men lay consecrated garments black over the violet land. Is this dress for death? Alas, not a single soul notes my suffering. Yeah, I mean, a bit of a downer, isn't it? But there we are. I mean,
it reminds me a bit of Paul Celan as well.
Yeah, Celan, that's true.
Similar style, and I feel like the way it's written.
That's true. These sort of very small fragments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Celan is similar. Yeah, he lived a bit longer, Celan, didn't he? But Higentlich also obviously had bouts of depression, and like Paul von Ostein as well. Mm-hmm. I think it was normal in those days. Creative people anyway, but also the times. I mean, God.
Absolutely, yeah. You know. I mean, it's great to see how far we've come, you know, from the early 20th century.
And now here we are in this kind of Dreiländereck where these three lands meet, and I guess these guys would have been happy, wouldn't they, to see that that's just a place of celebration and cultures meeting and sharing.
Actually, you know, I feel like we need a bit of a more uplifting poem now as well. And I found one by a Dutch writer called Marie Baudet.
Baudet, okay.
Baudet. Mm-hmm. And she died in 1914, so just at the beginning of the First World War. And she wrote a poem called Very Far, and I feel like I found it very hopeful, especially these dark times we were talking about.
Let's do it. I think the police have gone, so we can be uplifted now. You can be quite loud now, I think.
Marie Baudet, Very Far. I wish I could take you in my arms, carry you very far, along barren fields and cool roads. The evening star would be our kind guide, when over day-weary lands rose evening and night, soft shadows. I would lead you along rose hedges and birdhouses, very far away, along blue seas and sandy beaches, till we landed in Peace City, where each human face is like a flower that opens because she stands in light and peace. There I would lead you. Flowery meadows would be there spreading, and trees swaying in the green night, and golden songs would bloom there, and overglowing flower stories of happy hills and smiling splendor. And it would be there like a blonde morning in fairyland, and we would wander hand in hand, moving very tenderly in our souls, and everything became new, along new roads, in solid beauty of peace's blessing.
Oh, I feel very uplifted now. Very nice. Very idealistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea of, you know, you can just walk through peaceful lands along...
Yeah, wonderful. How old was she when she died? Do you know, roughly?
I mean, she was born in 1844, so she had quite a long life.
By those, in those, by standards of those days, she did all right. Yeah. And she went at the right time, right? Because that was, pretty bad time. Mm-hmm. So that was called Very Far, which gives me an idea. Now that we seem to be all right again. The police have gone. Mm-hmm. Over there, can you see that big tower?
Very pretty.
It's a
bit brutalistic.
It's a bit sort of 70s, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the Wilhelmina Turm, right? Yeah? And you can see a long way, very far from up there.
Very far.
And it is actually, and here we go, one sort of a bonus point.
Right.
And actually the highest point in the Netherlands, so the sort of mound of earth upon which it stands. Mm-hmm. How high do you think it is? What do you reckon?
Ooh, good question. I know that. I think the highest point in Schleswig-Holstein, which is also close to the coast, is, I think, 180 metres high.
Well, I mean, that's next to the coast. We're a long way from the coast.
We're a long way from the coast. So maybe, I don't know, twice that, maybe 400 metres?
Not bad. Yeah, I mean, obviously you can see why Holland is called, or the Netherlands is called the Low Countries, right?
The Low Countries, yeah.
323 metres high. Yeah. So it's more of a knoll.
It's a hill. Yeah.
And probably with a rabbit in the middle of it, right?
Yeah, true. Yeah. Running over it.
A heart.
Right. Let's climb up there, but can we get some food first?
You've been speaking too much.
I've been speaking too much Luxembourgish.
Too much Luxembourgish. Yeah. You want to get some food?
Yeah.
But we just had breakfast.
But you did. I lost my appetite thinking about being arrested by the Belgian police.
You lost your appetite, but I gave you bacon and eggs. I mean, you losing your appetite is unheard
of. Look, puffertjes.
Waffertjes?
Poffertjes. They're tiny pancakes, and they're served either traditionally with butter and powdered sugar, or you can have savoury poffertjes with Gouda cheese, or you can have really extravagant poffertjes with caramel or chocolate sauce and fresh fruit.
Izzy! Slap out of it.
Sorry, got a bit carried away. But... you know, the Poffertjes pod has a very nice ring to it.
Absolutely not. You've done enough with Beethoven, I think. Come on, let's get up those stairs. We'll go to that little food stand afterwards, I promise.
How about the picnic pod?
Yeah, you're being ridiculous.
You're the one who loves alliterations.
Yeah.
Perhaps the pretzel pod.
Or the pastry pod.
Ooh, the potted shrimp pod.
No, you're reaching with that one, I think. How about the pot noodle pod?
Yeah, how tall is this tower?
Approximately 35 alliterations, meters high.
Right.
And there we go, we made it to the top. And, we've got the whole place to ourselves, looks like. Oh, apart from someone over there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That guy looks like he's reading. Is he reciting? Is he?
It looks like he has a poem in his hand. That would be
a real coincidence. I mean, he's sort of walking around, surveying the landscape and reading from a small book.
Yeah.
Cannot be the case. Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt you. What are you doing?
So actually, I was just reading this. I was just checking out the view and reading this this poem. So why are you interested?
Oh, we were just talking about poems, we actually...
Really?
Yeah, we'd be interested in poetry. So what's your poem about? What poem you're reading?
Oh, that's good to hear. Don't hear that a lot, but people are interested in poetry, so very happy about that. Yeah. This is a poem by Corinne Heijerman. She's a Flemish author, and we asked her to write something about this region. Because I work for, we say in the Netherlands, we say a stichting. So I'm Stiftung. So foundation called Panda. And we have this project called Borderlines. And we ask writers from the Netherlands and Belgium and Germany to write about this region. And she wrote something about a Drielandepunt, also Dreiländereck, wo wir jetzt sind.
So the place where these three countries come together, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Belgium and Netherlands, this southern part of Limburg and Germany. And
I guess we should introduce ourselves, because I'm Orlando.
I'm Izzy.
Who is you exactly?
Nice to meet you. I'm Marlijn, Marlijn Huntjens.
Marlijn, okay, nice name. So are you a poet yourself?
Yes, actually, yeah.
Ah. Okay, and you've come up here to find a little bit of inspiration, I guess, and read this poem.
Yes.
Can you see all the three countries from up here?
Yeah, but it's a bit funny. I realized that when I read the poem, that when you go up high, you can actually see the three countries, but the borders are not visible anymore. So everything looks the same. So that on high altitudes, the borders disappear. You only see borders when you stand right in front of them. So it's a bit ironic that they put such a watchtower on a place with so many borders, because you can't even see them when you're up here.
It's true, yeah. I mean, I could see forests and villages and streets, but I couldn't tell you where one country begins and the other ends, yeah.
Exactly.
So where are you from? Are you Dutch or are you Belgian? Where are you from?
I'm Dutch, and I'm from Heerlen. Small city, I would say, in the southern part of the Netherlands, in Zuid-Limburg, born and raised there, and I still live there.
So you say Limburg, but so this is kind of, is this the old Roman duchy of Limburg, yeah? So this is like its own area. So, I mean, do you consider yourself to be Dutch? Because we just met somebody really interesting. She comes from East Belgium, which is an area I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, also die Deutsch. Deutschsprachige Gemeinschaft.
Deutschsprachige Gemeinschaft, exactly. And you come from an area which is kind of like a peninsula, right? It's you're almost surrounded by other countries, right in the south of Netherlands. Do you consider yourself Dutch?
Yeah, I consider myself Dutch. And I consider myself Limburgs, one would say, except when a lot of people speak the Limburgian language. Then I really feel Dutch, because I don't speak the Limburgian language, not as fluent, because my mother was German and my father always said that he was happy that she learned Dutch and that they're not going to teach, not going to speak in another dialect. But the main language here is Limburgs, I would say. But when I go to, so it always shifts, because when I go to Amsterdam, I feel like I'm in the Ausland, I'm in another country and I feel like a tourist. So there I feel very Limburgs. But in Roermond, for example, or Venlo, or in Maastricht, I don't feel Limburgs at all. I feel Heerlens.
Okay. So tell us about Heerlen. What's that place like?
So I really would recommend you to go to Heerlen, because at first glance, it doesn't appear to be much. Heerlen is an area coming forth from a history of mining industries. Before that, in the 1800s, it was just a small village with some farms and maybe more a collection of villages. And then the coals were discovered in the ground and the mines came. So the Hollanders, the people from up there, from Holland, they came here to mine. Some Limburgers, which are really, or some Helenaren, which are really more cynical, would say the Dutch occupation. and in that time, we really flourished as a city. So we were the richest region in the Netherlands. And in that period, we have a very tall glass building in the center of Heerlen called the Glaspaleis, the Palace of Glass. For example, that was built in the more wealthy period of Heerlen, I would say 1920s, 1930s, but could be wrong. And then in the 60s, the mines closed. So the upper class went back to Holland and left the working class here with a lot of promises, which they did not keep. So this is an area with no difference, no real difference between upper and lower class, I would say, within the cultural sector. It's not that there is no high art. There is high art, but it's accessible for a larger group of people, I would say, than in cities where the difference between high and low culture is bigger. So everything is a bit more horizontal and a bit more accessible for everyone. And there's no real looking down upon a group and not real looking up. But could also be my perspective and my bubble. Could be that other people experience something completely different. But when I compare it to cities like, for example, Roermond or Maastricht, I experience a bigger sense of upper class or high culture. Not that I'm against it or anything, but the differences are more obvious, more clear than in Heerlen.
In terms of the spoken word and in terms of poetry. So you're active, I'm assuming, in your hometown as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What sort of things are going on there that you're pushing forward?
Yeah, in 2016, we started this series of poetry slams in the U region. So I was participating in the championships myself in 2016 and 17 and 18. And I thought, well, that would be nice if we did something like that here. But it can't be the same thing as we see in Utrecht, for example, or in Amsterdam. It must be its own thing. And I just went to Aachen, for example. Ich habe damals mit Oskar Malinowski gesprochen, and I asked him, how did they do it in Aachen? How do they organize poetry slams in Germany? And how does the German scene, how does it look like? And what can we learn from that? So that our poetry slam in Heerlen would be a real hybrid of these two cultures, because I was used to the Dutch poetry slam scene and tried to learn a lot from the Germans. And last year we did the same with Liège in the Walloon region. So we try to organize different poetry slam events every year, which consist of a sort of your region hybrid, because mixing up everything is fun, I would say, especially when you have this much borders in your region.
Absolutely. So do you write poetry yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Could we hear one of your poems? Do you have anything with you by any chance?
Yeah, sure.
He keeps trying until he succeeds. Schließlich beschloss er, eine neue Planet zu bauen. Das Einzige, was er braucht, ist Wasser, verschiedene Sorte Fleisch und Erde. To show where the land begins, he divided the water. Es gab Land und kein Land, und er regierte über beides. It all started on the ground in the backyard. He thought that was clear enough. In die Achtertuin groeiden veel soorten planten, en tussen die planten was aarde en ruimte zat. Zijn meeste planten zijn groen, en er groeien gekleurde ballen aan. In die ballen zit vruchtvlees en water. Dat vlees en water moest hij verdelen over de huizen to be. Zwischen den Pflanzen baute er Häuser, die klein genug waren, um die Stängel der Pflanzen wie Stämme erscheinen zu lassen. The small scale of life made everything hard enough, Bäumhäuser darin zu bauen, maar dat liet hij aan de nieuwe kleine mensen over. Sie brauchen den Schöpfer auch nicht, um Grenze zu ziehen. They only need each other from now on.
That was really, really interesting. So what gave you the idea to write that in three different languages?
So it was more or less based on the same philosophy Corinne had when she wrote her poem about the view and the borders. This was specially written for an event in Aachen. And the event was regional in approach. So we had people from Germany and the Netherlands, also from Aachen und Heerlen, in the audience. So that was a reason to do it in multiple languages. And another reason was that the godlike figure speaking in this poem doesn't see language and doesn't see borders, but he can't speak nothing. So he has to not choose a language. So he chose every language. And at the end of the poem, he says, let the choosing and the borders be up to the new humans on the new sphere. So they can choose their borders and they can choose their language. Because when you're up high on a tower or as a godlike figure, you don't see borders and you don't see language.
We're kind of lucky up here on our ivory tower, yeah, Elfenbeinturm, mm-hmm. not being able to see these borders. But if we went down now and we wanted to hear a little bit of the Limburg's dialect, yeah, what kind of things could we expect to hear? Because this is very specific to this region.
Also ich würde sagen, die sprechen hier so, they talk a bit like they talk in Köln, or das Aachense Dialekt, das gehört mehr zum Deutschen, sag ich sehr vorsichtig. But Heerlen, for example, that's another region. So it's again an all new dialect. Uh-huh. And if you want to hear the dialect, you should go drive up to, for example, this restaurant called Het Heigend Hecht, or the museum in Vaals, and you order a piece of fly, and you go sit very close to. You don't even have to search for elderly people, but if you really want to hear the Vaals dialect, you should sit very close to people who also eat fly.
Izzy, I think you're hungry probably, aren't you, as always?
I definitely want to go try the fly. Yeah, whatever it is.
Try the fly. Yeah, but we need to know. I mean, what is it, Merlin?
Yeah, you could say it's a sort of a pie, but you can't say pie. Taart.
Taart.
But it's not actually a taart. It's more like gebak. In Deutschland kennt man so die Tradition von Kaffee und Kuchen. Da gehört es mehr dazu. Ah. Also mehr Kuchen als Taart.
It's sweet, yeah?
Yeah, so it's sweet and it's mostly baked with fruits or even rice.
That sounds excellent. Well, I think we should probably go, Orlando. But before we go, Merline, where can we, you know, find out more about your work? What do we need to look for?
So I have a website which consists of different sentences being produced in front of your eyes. So it's not really an overview of my work, but they bring you to a lot of other websites where my work is presented. So my website is www.marlijnheuntjens.nl. But you could also Google me. And in August of this year, at least I hope, my first small, very small poetry book will come out at the published department of Wintertuin, which is a production house in Nijmegen, and they, how can I say, develop my talent, or they coach me. And this bundle is called, is a sort of chapbook, a sort of EP. When I was a musician and I would put out a record, I would first put out an EP. So with a few songs on it to go to the record labels and make a bit of Werbung for myself. And the chapbook is also, in comparison, a sort of EP. So cool. This year, my first book's coming out. Very excited about that.
Will you send us a copy?
Of course.
Cool. Well, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you so much also for your advice on restaurants and food.
And thank you for being so interested.
Our
absolutely.
Pleasure. Bye, yeah. Marlijn.
Bye. See you.
Bye.
Smakelijk.
Two poets in one day.
Unbelievable.
Unprecedented.
Unplanned.
Right, I'm ready for some food now. Shall we drive over to Vaals to check out the restaurant at the museum?
Yeah, let's do it in that order as well. I really want to try the fly. Mm. It sounds like an ad for an airline, doesn't
try
it?
Try the fly.
Try the fly.
Yeah, excellent. Right.
One problem.
Yeah.
My wallet is in the car. Have you got any money on you?
No, I left mine in the car as well.
Have you still got my car keys?
No, why would I have your car keys?
Because I gave them to you last night when I went to collect firewood and I didn't want to lose them in the forest.
No, you said you wanted to give them to me, but then you just ran off.
No, hoodlafats. I gave the keys to you, you took them, I remember it, and you said, yes, I'll look after them.
Well, great, now we'll be stuck in the Belgian forest looking for car keys forever. Now, this is really hoodlafats.
I don't, this is appalling. I feel like a rabbit that's gone through a hill. This is unbelievable. It's only the second episode.
Yeah, I mean, how much worse is it going to get?
We've got to go up north.
Let's go down. Oh, you mean... Oh,
how are we going to... The car...
Right, let's just focus now. Oh, you go over to the left side of the tent, I'll go over to the right side.
No fly for either of us, I think.